Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Mike Boris, and this is Straight Talk.
Every time the economy goes bad, war starts.
Do you think it's going to happen again?
We're already in it.
Robert Kiyosaki.
Robert Kiyosaki.
Robert Kiyosaki.
The entrepreneur, educator, and investor, best known as the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Your book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I don't know anybody who hasn't read this book.
If you can control your money, you control your life. My rich dad taught me about investing, playing Monopoly. Four greenhouses, red hotel. This is what the hand does, the mind remembers. It's a golden rule. Who has the gold makes the rules. China is in serious financial trouble. America is the biggest debtor nation in the world, printing $1 trillion every 90 days.
And they're issuing it as debt.
Yeah, and there's still no financial education. If you're hoping the government's going to save you, then you're in trouble. I'm saying wake up. It's imperative that every Aussie educate themselves to protect themselves. Aussie can change the world. It's a small, powerful, lucky country. But the world is caving in around you guys. Don't fuck it up.
Robert Kiyosaki, welcome to Straight Talk, mate.
Honored to be your program, and congratulations on all your entrepreneurial success. That's impressive.
Thanks very much. Well, coming from you, that's a big rap. Thanks very much.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm serious. So that is like, here we are. We've got your book. Like, this is like iconic. And I don't know. I actually don't know anybody in Australia. I mean this. I'm not just your book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I don't know anybody. I mean, there's lots of people probably haven't read, but I don't know anybody who hasn't read this book, honestly. And I'm dying to get you to write in it for me before you go, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Hopefully this is not your last one.
I hope so. Reorder.
Yeah. Reorder, please.
But I'll tell you a quick story. The book was turned down by every publisher in New York.
No.
They said, when it comes to money, you don't know what you're talking about. So this was 30 years ago. And now it's still number one in the world.
So this book's still number one in the world, and it was turned down by publishers?
Yeah.
And you said 30 years ago. This book's been around for 30 years?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
1997 it came out.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's time
27
gone
years,
so
yeah.
Fast for all of us. Like, it feels like it was maybe 10, 15 years ago, but 30 years ago.
Yeah, well, Aussie was I love this country. It is a lucky country, it really is. But they're the most receptive to my ideas.
Is that right?
Yeah. I forget what hotel I was staying at, but my hotel room, there was boxes and, I mean, not books, boxes of books. And I sat there for hours just autographing them. So the Aussies were really receptive, which gave me a big start.
Oh, that's, and can you, what is the, if you could tell us, as opposed to what we interpret, what do you think is the basic premise or the thesis of why you wrote this book and what the book stands for?
Well, as you know, the great battle on the planet Earth is Marxism versus capitalism. And in 1965, I was 17 years old. I went to school in New York. I went to military school. And my economics teacher had us read the Communist Manifesto by Marx. And that was pretty radical, you know what I mean, to a school teaching Marxism. But rather than study Keynes and Malthus and all this, he had us read Marx. And I realized most school teachers, like my poor dad, are Marxists. Not bad people, don't get me wrong. It's like a religion, you know, what religion? And as you know, what Marx said was the abolition of private property was the number one goal. And to this guy, Klaus Schwab out of Austria, wherever he's at, he says, someday you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. So I mean, that's what's going on the planet. And a lot of people subscribe to that. So my poor dad was a Marxist, Number two is that workers of the world unite. My part is head of the labor union, teachers union. Today, the biggest union in America, teachers unions. And that's why we have no financial education in our school. The third thing was that, oh yeah, a graduating income tax was essential for the spread of communism. And as you know, I mean, we're taxed to death now. And America was founded as a tax-free nation. In 1773, we had the Boston Tea Party to kick the bloody English out. But what happened in 1773, the British East India flag was transferred to the U.S., and it became the U.S. flag. So if you look at the British India, East India flag, which ran Australia also, the American flag is the British East India Club flag. Yeah. So the banks traded. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The bankers control the world. Like it or not, they control the world.
And they still do.
Yes, exactly. Because you would know that more than anybody. Yeah,
and when you try to take them on, you might get a little bit of their territory. You might actually get a bit of their market share. But eventually, over time, they change the rules that we all abide by, but they change the rules against you. And eventually, they now control the market again here in Australia. And by the way, the GFC was the greatest opportunity for them to take control back again.
They did.
And in Australia, COVID recently, or the so-called COVID or pandemic, whatever you want to call it, the flu, it gave, crazily enough, this is so crazy, you wouldn't think this would happen, but somehow our big banks in Australia took a greater control of the Australian lending market than they have had in the last 40 years because of COVID. Because the government gave them a whole lot of money on the premise that we need to give banks money to kickstart Australia again in the construction and lending environments. And we live off construction in this country, housing construction, and we'll give it to you at 0.1% for 3 years fixed, $200 billion, and go lend it. And they lend it at 2%, record low rates. And that gave banks market share. They took control of the market again, which is quite interesting. Banks are smarter than everyone gives them credit for. They have smarter people than everyone gives them credit for. Your rich dad, poor dad, is it an education attempt by you to educate people, stuff they don't learn at school?
My poor dad was head of education for the state of Hawaii. Very smart man, good man, big-hearted. But when I read Communist Manifesto in 65, I went, he's a Marxist. You know, abolition of private property, hated the rich, liked taxes, labor unions. And that's a free country. You can think what you want. And my rich dad was my best friend's father, capitalist. And so I had both capitalist education and a Marxist education. So I went to military school to learn all this, you know. I flew for the U.S. Marine Corps in Vietnam. And we killed a lot of communists out there. It was sad. So my concern is, as you know, America's going to war again. Because every time the economy goes bad, war starts. So that's what brought Hitler to power back in the early years, you know.
Do you think it's going to happen again?
We're already in it.
So can we explore it a bit? Because that's a bit fascinating to me. I mean, by the way, it's something I'm concerned about. Because when things are going bad for a political movement, let's start a war.
Yes.
Putin's a good example.
And you can print more money.
And we print money, we produce, because we need to print more money, because we need to produce more arms and various other things. And we'll go to war and we'll fight the good fight.
Well, if I give Aussies a plug here, I fought in Vietnam twice as a Marine, you know. And the Aussies were tremendously respected fighters. They were jungle fighters. And they said, what about Americans? I said, Americans clear the jungle, then they fight.
They did too. They cleared it with a certain agent.
They kill a lot of people that way too, you know.
Yeah, just dropped Agent Orange on them. Yeah. I remember those days. In fact, you know, it's interesting. And you won't know this individual, but maybe you do, but there was a prime minister who a gentleman who wanted to become prime minister of Australia and became a very famous prime minister. His name was Gough Whitlam. And I voted for Gough Whitlam. It's the only time I've ever voted Labor in my life, which is effectively your Democrats, because I was about to go to university. I was 18 years of age. I was at 18 years of age. And conscription was in Australia because the war was on, Vietnam War was on. And the last thing I wanted to do was go to Vietnam. Some of my older mates were there. They were telling, when they came back, they were telling me what it was like. It was sound dreadful to me. So I've actually voted against, in favour of the Labor Party. Gough Whitlam won the election, in favour of the Labor Party, just for one reason, so I didn't have to get conscripted. I'd rather go to university, and in those days, smoke marijuana on the library lawn. That's what everybody was doing. It's very interesting about, you talk about institutionalised or communism or Marxism, perhaps is a better way of putting it, and every version of Marxism. Today it's sort of watered down so you can't recognise it. But it is preeminent in institutional education institutions.
Yeah.
Preeminent, whether it's universities or schools. Yeah.
Yeah.
And but they don't label it as Marxist. No. They sort of
liberal or
They have a different view on it. Well, let's look after everybody, sort of thing. Yeah. You know, we're going to look after you. How does that? And I don't know about America. That's in Australia I'm talking about. But how is that in America? And why does everybody cop it? Why do you put up with it?
Well, again, military school, my school in New York, I had nominations to Naval Academy, Merchant Marine Academy, Army, Air Force, and Coast Guard. And we were taught acta non verba, deeds, not words. So the lesson we were taught as military officers, watch what a person does, not what they say. So if you watch politicians, I don't care what party, watch what they do, not what they say. So the first thing, I'm not Republican or Democrat, the first thing Biden did was he cut the Keystone Pipeline from Canada to America. And I'm an oil guy. I went to school. I worked for Standard Oil. I went to school to drive oil tankers for Standard Oil. And the price I was selling oil under Trump for $30 a barrel. The moment Biden came to office and cut that pipeline, oil went to $130 US. I knew exactly what he's going to do. He wants to create a gap between rich and poor. And that's revolution. As you know, it takes that gap to cause revolution.
Division,
yeah. Well, anger. So America is a very divided, angry country right now. And they can't figure out what's happening. You know, why did Biden cut the pipeline? He didn't have to. The second thing he did is opened our borders and 10 million people streamed across. Now fentanyl is going all across America. And Trump is a good friend of mine. I wrote two books with him. He gets accused of screwing older women, should we say. You know what I mean? He's a man's man. And we all know what he's up to. But Biden's caught sniffing a little girl's hair. I'm going,
yeah.
Watch what a person does, not what they say. And then
I've seen that vision, by the way. I've been sniffing the young girl's hair. That was a bit weird.
And not only that, Trump's two sons, Don Jr. and Eric, are good friends of mine. They're classy young men. I hunt with them, you know. So we're upstate New York with the two Trump boys. We go into this restaurant, and they go in back to talk to the Mexican, the illegals. They all shake hands and say hello and all that. They're great young men. And this guy, Hunter Biden, oh, my God, like father, like son, on drugs, porno, and all this stuff. His laptop goes missing.
You're funny about that.
Yeah, we can't find it, you know. So there's so much goofy stuff going on in America. We're so divided right now. It's not safe. It's not good.
Do you think that, Biden's been not accused, been characterized as someone who's not competent, mentally competent, probably even physically so, but definitely not mentally competent to run a country. Do you think that Americans in the election 2024 this year are going to re-elect him notwithstanding that, or do you think that people are going to move away from Biden and perhaps look for somebody else, and that maybe not Trump, but somebody else, like cast their vote another direction, perhaps Kennedy?
Bobby Kennedy.
Yeah. But where do you think Americans are going to, because is this Kennedy seeing that there is a gap in this division between the two camps and is running up the middle? And how big a, not a threat, but how big a threat is he to both Biden and to Trump?
Well, Bobby Kennedy's a good man. Nobody owns him. And he wrote about this COVID thing and all this. And he wrote against Fauci, you know, those guys are criminals. Big Pharma runs the world, sort of the banks, as you know.
Yeah.
So Bobby Kennedy is like his family. You can't buy them. So I like Bobby Kennedy. And it's not Republican or Democrat. I just want somebody to keep their, you know, actions speak louder than words. And so Bobby Kennedy took on Big Pharma, which is good.
And how do you think he goes there? Because Big Pharma is extraordinarily strong in terms of lobby and can create all sorts of havoc for an individual. Are they going to run him down, like start campaigns against him? Have they started something against Kennedy, like start to attack his character?
My concern, you know, as Stalin said years ago, he says, it's not who votes that counts, it's who counts the votes. And so that's why election was stolen, I think it was. But America's a bad habit of taking out the Kennedys with guns. So I'm afraid—
There's been quite a few of them have gone down with being killed.
John and Bobby. So America's they're messing with power and the banking powers, you know, the cartels. The Federal Reserve Bank is not an American bank. It's a cartel of the richest banks in the world. And you know that running a mortgage company. You don't play their game. They stomp on you. So that's my concern. You know, money is power, like it or not.
Yeah. So what do we do as, you know, as a voter, as a small— we would all consider ourselves as just one vote out of many millions, and in the case of US, hundreds of millions. What do we do about that? I mean, how do we get fairness and justice, or do we just cop it on the chin?
Well, everybody has their own idea how to do this. My idea way back when was educate yourself. So I created the cash flow board game because I learned investing playing Monopoly. And Maria Montessori, you know, she's one of the great educational entrepreneurs. She said, what the hand does, the mind remembers. So in school, I sat there, words went in one ear, out the other, you know, just said nothing. And that was my poor dad, lecture, talk. Whereas my rich dad taught me about investing, playing Monopoly, four greenhouses, red hotel, four green. So today I own 10,000 rental units and three hotels. You know, I also invest in Bitcoin. I use debt and I use all that. Everything school doesn't teach you. So when I saw your CV, you know, with mortgages and all that, that's essential. But you're messing with fire. You know what I mean? It's a golden rule. Who has the gold makes the rules.
Yeah, I know that. I quite like taking on the establishment. I always have. I have fun with basically like sort of being Robin Hood a little bit. Sneaking out in the middle of the night and taking market share from anybody who's unaware or not paying attention. The problem is the big organizations pay much more attention today. And as opposed to, say, 10, 15 years ago, they're much more aware of people like me and John Simons from Aussie Homelands and those guys who, to some extent, I wonder who the new young people are, because this takes a lot of energy. What I was doing takes a lot of energy. I was in my 40s. I mean, I still got some energy around it, but it's much harder, and you've got to be much more stealthy and much more intelligent about it, and require much more resources than ever in the past, because they've got massive resources. The depth of their resources, both money wise, but intellectually, but also data. I mean, their data resources are outrageous, what they know about you. If you're a customer of somebody, a big bank or a big pharma or a big telco, they know everything about your life.
Yep.
They know what you do, where you go, how much you spend, how often, what on, how many Ubers you arrange, how many times you go to the casino, online casino, gamble, how much money you draw out of the bank because you can't. There's no cash. There's no cash in Australia. 85% of transactions in Australia are online.
Well, you see your armored car services going out of business.
Because they don't have to collect cash anymore.
Yeah.
And clubs, like I'm on the board of a lease club, we hardly have any cash. So because the armored car service is quite expensive for us. So, you know, we just deal with our own cash. So, and there's not much anyway. So, and as this cash disappears, your behaviors, our behaviors become much more available for others to collect data on. Where do you see us going with all this stuff, Robert? Like I feel like it's closing in on all of us and we can't stop it. I mean, this is, Marxism is not only about making sure that no one owns anything, but in fact, we don't even own our own dignity at some stage. Correct. We will lose all our privacy.
Correct.
That's part of the process. Is there one person sitting, not one person, but is there a group of people sitting there planning all this sort of stuff? Because I can't imagine. I can't understand why no one's ever talked about them. Who are they? I mean, who's the people who are getting rid of the cash out of the system? Is there one person, or is it a group of people? Is there some sort of cult? How does this operate?
Well, I think it was inevitable it was going to happen, that money would go crypto. So that's why the reason I have, I think I have 70 Bitcoin. I don't know how many I got.
But crypto is good. I'm talking about when banks won't let you deal in cash.
No, that's what I'm saying.
We should go crypto.
I'm getting off the banking system. Yep. So I own a lot of gold and silver, things like that. So I don't want anything they can print. So I own stocks, but at my company, I took them public. And my goal was to take companies public on New York, NASDAQ, and Toronto Stock Exchange. So I got New York, I got Toronto Stock Exchange. This summer I go public on NASDAQ. So it's, I control the paper, but I'm an entrepreneur. You know, that's trained to do this stuff. Take control of your life. So I created the cash flow board game so people can teach people what schools will not teach you. And if you can control your money, you control your life. But years ago, I read a book by R. Buckminster Fuller. It was in 74. The book was called Grunch of Giants. Grunch stands for Gross Universal Cash Heist. Simply said, he was saying, your wealth is stolen via your money. So the harder you work for money, the more tax you pay, inflation. You put it in the bank, inflation steals it.
And fees.
Yeah, fees, all that. I'm not against it. I'm saying wake up.
Yeah, so what would you advise? So let's say someone's under 30. I guess it doesn't matter what age you are, but someone's under 30 and they're getting nervous. You know, they're all saying, should I buy Bitcoin today? I mean, Bitcoin's at record highs at the moment again. Should I buy these cryptocurrencies? Should I start to step into these environments? When should they invest in these environments? At the height of the market, or is the market going to continue to grow, or is it, or should they seek another one? Like perhaps they should look at Ethereum or some other currency that's cheaper. I mean, should young people approach these markets?
Well, it's very simple. You've got to choose your education. You know, if you listen to a financial planner, like a super person, they can put you in stocks and bonds, and bonds are crashing. You know, it used to be, and I don't know how it is in Aussie here, but bonds were considered safe. Today, they're the most dangerous assets you can put your money into. And the S&P 500 is at all-time highs. And my generation, the boomer generation, is getting ready to retire. So, this little cartoon character, Peanuts, with Lucy and Peanuts. And so Lucy would hold the football like this, and Charlie would run up, and she'd pull the ball away. I think they're going to do that to the boomers. I wrote a book called Who Stole My Pension? And written by a forensic economist. They're going to steal our pensions. They're already stealing it. So the American baby boom generation is a 50-50 chance won't retire. Their houses, you know, all they got is their house, not most of them. But homelessness is on the increase. You know, it's not bad here yet. But look at San Francisco, the most beautiful cities on earth, very, very much like Sydney. People are homeless all over the place. They can't afford a house.
Is it as bad as we see it on TV, but is it that bad?
I went to see it myself. Yeah, it's terrible. It's spreading all across America.
Except Texas. Texas. Everyone's moving to Texas.
Yeah. Texas and
Florida. So it just on the stock market, and I'd like to get your take on this. I read some articles recently that were talking about the valuations of American stocks, particularly some of those ones that are sort of trading in that AI territory, and the multiples that are sort of sitting against these stock trades. And they're sort of saying that this article, it was in The Economist, but it's sort of indicating that it's just not possible to grow from here at the same rate or in anywhere near the rate that it has grown in the past, and that the people are paying prices today based on future outcomes. And if I want to be a naysayer or perhaps a stock pessimist, well, just call me a naysayer, then I would be shorting the market. In other words, I'd be selling stocks because it just can't continue to grow at the rate it's been growing. But on the flip side of it, it just keeps growing. I don't understand it. I don't play in the American market in particular. What's going on? Is it people just got this fever, I better buy, and they have no idea what they're buying, and they're just getting convinced?
Well, there's no financial education in America. You know, you look at our leaders, you know, most of the people who run our Federal Reserve Bank and our government, they're PhDs, like my poor dad. Poor PhD stands for poor, helpless, and desperate. Look at this guy, Bernanke, you know, I mean, he's the Fed chairman. Yep. When it crashed, he dropped interest rates to zero and printed trillions. So today, America's in this huge bubble, this cash sitting everywhere. And the stock market's in a bubble, real estate's in a bubble, and all this. How much longer can it go? Today, America's the number one debtor nation in the world. Every 90 days, they're printing another $1 trillion to cover the shortfall.
And they're issuing it as debt.
Yeah. They're printing more money because our taxes don't cover our expenses. They're printing $1 trillion every 90 days.
Wow.
And there's still no financial education. And then you look at China. Evergrande went down and Market Garden went down. China's going bankrupt, and so is Germany. So, you know, as I say, when America sneezes, Aussie gets pneumonia. And so we're the lucky country, but the world is caving in around you guys. So that's the spooky part. So that's why I say to everybody, buy some silver. You know, silver's about $20. It used to be $50. And then I like Bitcoin because Bitcoin gets stronger, dollar gets weaker.
This is a correlation.
Yeah. So I own like, I think 60 Bitcoin or something, not much, but you know, I was buying it at 6,000.
Wow. And you're sitting on a nice profit now.
Yeah. Well, it's better that than losing it, you know.
No, but given that you're sitting on a profit, I mean, would you consider cashing it in and your profit, taking your profit off the table now?
Well, you're a banker. I borrow against assets.
Can you borrow against your Bitcoin?
Of course I can.
Yeah. That's not something that has taken on here in Australia at this stage, but it is to come that you should be able to borrow against your Bitcoin because it is an asset.
Yeah.
I mean, there might be an issue around what the leverage is, but it doesn't matter because of the volatility of the pricing. But you should be able to borrow against your Bitcoin. Bitcoin here hasn't really taken off as a with merchants. How prevalent is merchants in making Bitcoin available or any of the cryptos available in terms of transactions?
Well, Bitcoin is, you know, people's money. I say gold and silver are God's money because God put it here. But Bitcoin is people's money. That's the blockchain technology. And blockchain technology is basically a ledger, you know, a financial statement. And that's why I think Aussie will probably come up with his own central bank digital.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid I don't have any proof of this, but they'll use central bank money to surveil you. That's what China does. So they know what you're spending your money on. If you're buying too many drugs, they'll come after you. You're doing this. So they're going to use our money as a surveillance tool. I'm afraid of that. So that's why I own tons of silver coins. So if push comes to a shove, I'll come pay you in silver.
But actual physical silver coins. Yeah. Like the old days when people used to buy Krugerrands.
Correct.
The old gold Krugerrands.
I'll tell you a story. I was a pilot in Vietnam, and then it was in 72, and Nixon took the dollar off the gold standard. So my rich dad said, watch out, the world's going to change. So I said, how's it going to change? So I flew behind enemy lines. Marines are not the brightest guys on earth. I flew behind enemy lines to a gold, you know, I was reading the map of Vietnam. It's a pick and shovel AU gold, like Aussie gold, you know. I said, well, let's go buy some gold. He said, yeah, but it's enemy lines. He says, we'll be in and out very quick. So my co-pilot and I, we're not smart guys. We walk up to the gold window. We're in a village, you know, people are staring, what the hell are these guys doing here? Don't they know? We disarmed, no weapons, walked in. So we come as capitalists, not Marines, you know. I'm talking to this little Vietnamese woman with red teeth, and I think gold was, let's say, $50. I tried to give her 30 for it. And she looked at me and went, spot. Went, what? I said, 30. Spot. I didn't know what spot meant. I said, I got a spot in my shirt or something. And she was talking about gold is the same price throughout the world. That little Vietnamese woman, I don't think she went to Harvard.
And then she was none of these available.
Yeah. And she was telling me, she was teaching me the best lessons of all. So we came home empty-handed, and I flew then to Hong Kong, and I bought my first gold rand. It was a Krugerrand. $50 I paid for it. I still have that Krugerrand today.
Oh, wow.
And it's now worth $2,200. So the Krugerrand didn't change in size, but the dollar came down, you know?
It's funny. This is not an old discussion. This is not a new discussion, I should say. This is an old discussion because if we go back to the 1890s when the U.S. suffered a big, well, just prior to that and in early part of the 1890s, the world has suffered a depression, but the U.S. suffered the biggest depression that they had. It was the biggest depression in the United States, greater than the 1930s. And a bloke called Frank Baum wrote a book, and it was called The Wizard of Oz.
And that's a very good description.
Yes. And the Oz, of course, was about an ounce of gold. And the big argument, because there was an election on, and the big argument at the time was, should we have the silver standard or the gold standard? And, of course, Dorothy had silver shoes originally. They only got made out of Technicolor when they made the movie, but original shoes were silver, and it was her silver shoes bouncing on the gold road, yellow brick road, the gold standard. And of course, the Emerald City was the paperback. And the big argument around then was, what should it be? And should we have this paper money? Is it useless? This is what government prints and makes, and is it just promissory notes made by government? Like, we promise to pay or honour. And the big argument was, stuff all that, we should go back to silver coins and gold coins, because people who worked on the railways got paid paid silver dollars. And unfortunately, the silver price went down. That was a big issue. But that argument, this discussion that we're now having is not a new discussion. It's an old discussion. And everybody gets nervous today. Oh, this is a conspiracy theory. No, this is real. This has happened before. And it's not a new thing.
Oh.
And we're all been getting stitched up by governments and narratives coming from various media outlets, et cetera, about which way they want us to go. And as I said earlier, this is in the end, governments always win. Unfortunately, they always win. So all we can do as individuals is set ourselves up so we don't get ripped off. And I think part of your thesis there, therefore, is educate yourself.
Yes.
And
because school's not
going
to teach you this.
Yeah, no one's going to tell you this. So as part of your visit to Australia, by the way, someone told me, sadly, this is your last visit to Australia.
I'm an old man, so this is a long
on,
trip.
Robert.
Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll come back. But in this visit, are you, let's call it roadshow, are you espousing this very thesis?
Again, I created the cash flow board game because I learned everything playing Monopoly.
Yep.
And Maria Montessori, a great educational entrepreneur, says, what the hand does, the mind remembers. So by playing the cash flow board game, you actually fill out a financial statement. And your financial statement is what your banker wants to see. Your banker doesn't care what your report card says. So I can borrow a lot of money because I have strong financials, as you know. If I have bad financials, give me a credit card.
Yeah, and I'll charge more.
Yeah, it's a person that take care of their This is your greatest asset, your greatest liability. And so I'm out here to encourage, because Aussie has been I've been coming here since 72.
Wow.
I came out here to play rugby union, you know. Lost every game, but I loved it here. And it's a great country. It is a lucky country. And so today I was speaking at Randwick, and I was saying, get a board game, teach yourself, play it 10 times, and teach 10 people. Aussie can change the world. It's a small, powerful, lucky country. Or you can wait for school to teach you something.
The cash flow board game is called the cash flow board game. That's what it's called.
Because you know that's the two most important words in business.
Cash flow totally is. Assets are important.
Which way is it flowing, in or out?
Yeah, right?
You want it flowing in.
We got more coming in than going out, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And it's about net cash flow. But the cash flow board game, it's a game that you invented?
Yeah.
It's your game.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how get 30, how get 20, 20, 20, how get 20, 20, how get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Can I just tap into your intellect around the 2024 election? I know you're a friend of Trump's. You've done things together. You've collaborated, et cetera, on books, et cetera. I've met him on a couple of occasions. And we talked about the division in the United States. Is the division such that if either one of either Biden or Trump wins the election, presidential position, is it going to be such that neither one will have a proper mandate and can do nothing? In other words, you know, like they become hamstrung. Either the Senate won't pass anything that the lower house or the Congress passes, or the Congress won't agree with anything that the Senate proposes. Is that a potential to just maintain the division no matter who wins?
Well, I think the problem with Trump, he's got guts, you know.
He definitely does.
And he stepped on a lot of toes. Bankers. They don't like him. So as I said, you know, Bobby Kennedy, John Kennedy, they got taken out. So even if he's elected, his life is more in danger than. Like I said, his two sons and I are really good friends. And they got balls, you know. They speak out. They work for the people. As I said, you know, I know the Trump boys. I watch what they do. So just watch what a person does, not what they say. So I know them personally, and I wouldn't say this if it wasn't true. I've spent weeks, and that I mean a week of the hunting on a private island, no water, no toilets, nothing. Those boys ask no quarter. You know, they go in the woods and they fish, and we have to catch our own food. They're tough young men, very good men, young men.
Do you think there's room for one of those two boys to take up the role in relation to that side of politics? I won't call it Republicans, but that side of politics, because, you know, as you say, Donald is, he's got so many things against him at the moment. I mean, even if he does win, it's still going to be a tough gig, a really tough gig.
Yeah.
And they're not going to stop coming after him.
Correct.
It's already started. It's one of those things you sort of can't stop unless he pardons himself on everything. Do you think one of those two boys might take up the baton?
Well, politics is a dirty game. I wouldn't wish it on anybody.
Yeah.
You know, I just give them credit for being in the spotlight, the limelight, you know. Like, I talk to them occasionally. I run into the boys and I just give them credit. They got guts. You know, it's hard to stand up to the banking system, as you know.
But Robert, I often look at Donald Trump and I think to myself, I don't know how many charges and how many cases he's got against him, but there's a lot. And then they've got this one where they're trying to take $500 million off him in cash, like as a surety against his appeal.
Yeah.
How does he keep going? I don't know him well enough to answer that question, so I thought maybe I'd get some insights, because I just don't know where he gets the guts to keep doing what he does. Why is he so driven? What is it? Is it because he's so driven to save America? Is that what it is?
I've written two books with the guy. I spent about total about 8 weeks working with him and his company, the Trump Organization. Really good people. But when they weaponize the FBI and the court system against the man, that's fascism. You know, they take our court system and go after him. That's fascism. So America's in serious trouble. And that's my concern.
Is he's game to try and change that, though?
Well, that's why he got taken out, you know. He said, I'm going to drain the swamp. He's talking about, you know, the central banks, swamp. They're all in cahoots.
But I feel as though, just the sense I get is that Trump's on his own. I got a feeling Biden's not doing much at all, but there's a massive machine sitting behind him, well organized politically, etc. And I just have this feeling that Trump's sort of there by himself, and he's sort of carrying the whole burden on his own shoulders. I just don't feel as though he has I don't know if it's true or not, but it doesn't seem like he's got the same machine sitting behind him, other than those people who want to vote for him.
Right.
But I mean the machine between him and those people, it doesn't feel as though that's the same as the Democrats have. And that machine looks like it's going to run him down. The Democrats' machine looks – the Liberal machine looks like it's going to run him out of town.
Right.
That's the gut feeling I have sitting here in Australia. Yeah, and
I would say you're accurate.
So what is there – what hope is there for the U.S.?
Well, I always say, you know, like put yourself on your own gold standard or silver standard, educate yourself. We're going in for a rough ride. Let me say it again. China is in serious financial trouble. America is the biggest debtor nation in the world, printing $1 trillion every 90 days. Germany's in bankruptcy. So Aussie is going to be the lucky country. So you're sheltered a bit. But as you know, China is your largest trading partner. And so it's important, imperative that every Aussie educate themselves to protect themselves. But if you're hoping the government's going to save you, you're in trouble.
It's funny. I had it in 2016. I sat opposite Trump and I interviewed him. And this is before any presidential aspirations. I think it was 16, might have been 15, whatever.
Yeah.
And he said to me, one of the things he's concerned about is Australia's trading relationship with China.
Yeah.
And he said to me, and I at the time naively said, well, yeah, but they're our biggest trading partner. We shouldn't upset them, sort of thing. He said, let me tell you something. He said, yeah, they'll take all your iron ore and everything else that you're selling, coal, et cetera, that you're selling to them. He said, but ultimately you'll end up owing them something.
Yep.
Owing them something. He said, like we are in the United States, you've got to do something about that. That's what you've got to do something about. And it's interesting, your words to me just then, because the biggest owner of the debt in the United States, it gets issued on all these months, as you're talking
bonds,
is China.
Yep.
They hold Japan.
And Japan.
They hold the greatest amount of debt, which America owes.
Yeah.
It's funny when you say that to me, I just have a memory of what Trump told me. And I thought to myself at the time, what he said was quite out there. Today, I would say it's quite courageous, but sort of accurate. And what you're saying is effectively endorsing what he said back in 2016. Now it's all come to roost now.
Yep.
It's eight years later, it's all come to roost.
Yep.
We now have this problem.
Yep.
And China's falling apart too, economically as well.
Yep.
So it sounds like we could be in globally in for some other crisis.
Correct.
What it's called, I don't know. It won't be a GFC. It won't be a financial – well, maybe a financial crisis. Who knows? Because the value of their paper, the Chinese paper that it holds in relation to American debt
– correct.
– is not worth anywhere near what it was issued at.
Correct.
And China needs as much as they can possibly get.
Yeah.
Because they've got a few problems internally themselves. Are you sort of suggesting there could be a crisis on its way?
There is one. We're in it right now.
We're in it now.
Well, Xi, you know, the premier, he says his mandate is going to take Taiwan back.
So create a war, solve the problem.
Yeah. He says before, you know, that's like Trump saying, I'm going to take Taiwan back. That's war, you know. And so what's going on in Ukraine and all this, it's terrible. I mean, I hate war. I just hate it. I fought twice in Vietnam, killed a lot of people. But it's about money, as you know. You know, like I said, it's a very dangerous time on Earth, so it's important that everybody take responsibility for yourselves financially, not expect the government to take care of you. So I go around saying, put yourself on your own gold standard, put yourself on your own silver standard. You know, save gold, silver, or Bitcoin, and protect yourself now with it, your brain, you know. But don't expect the government to take care of you. Aussie is the lucky country. But you sit behind these superpowers going to war. And spooky.
Do you think war is inevitable?
Well, historically, yes. See, what brought Hitler to power was the Weimar Republic when World War I, and they made Germany pay reparations. So Germany went bankrupt. Hitler came to power. So every time there's chaos, a dictator comes to power. So that was fascist. That was Mussolini and Hitler. So it's these are not normal times. But I don't know. I mean, I would just prepare.
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying, economically prepare. We're not, yeah. You're not sort of suggesting be a doomsdayer and go and build a hunker down and build a vault underneath your house and fill it up with cans of baked beans and water, etc.
Just watch historically. I mean, you're in the banking business. 2019, the repo market collapsed. That's where the banks go to borrow money. It collapsed, and then suddenly COVID appeared. I went, oh, is this an accident?
That's interesting. I never thought about that.
Interesting, because I watch the stuff. Is there a coincidence?
So just I might explain to our audience what the repo market means in terms of Australia at least. It means if I'm a bank and I've got mortgage assets, I normally can go and if I got a pool of mortgages, which are my assets, and I've got liabilities where I've borrowed money as from depositors on the other side if I'm a bank. Repo means that I can go to the government. The government will buy my mortgages off me for the face value of the
Correct.
Mortgage. So if I lend Robert $100,000 and there's $10,000 of Roberts in my pool and I need some cash to lend more money to more Roberts, but I'm running out of cash because I'm a bank and I haven't because I'm not receiving the deposits, then I can go to the government and the government runs a repo program where they will take my mortgages off me. In your case, they put him in Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. In the US, in Australia, we don't have that system, but they'll still buy them off us and they'll give us cash for it yeah. as the bank, and then we'll go and lend some more money. And the repo market, you're saying, in 2019, prior to COVID,
went down.
Collapsed. Well, it didn't collapse, but yes, went down. It wasn't as much liquidity in the system to liquidity being money available for the banking system.
Correct.
Because what you just said to me is really interesting because when COVID hit in our country, March, within 4 months, our central bank here cut a check of $190 billion to our banking system. They said, banks, not non-banks like me, but to banks, here's $190 billion. We'll give you to a point one of a, to you at 0.1%. Fixed for 3 years.
Yeah.
Go lend it.
Yeah.
And of course, that created inflation and
yeah,
the bubble.
Bubble, yeah.
The property market bubble. Yeah. It just went off. And then, of course, last year, the government said, well, we want that repay because the 3 years is up, 2023. Yeah. You know, just not exactly on that day, but from 2023 based on drawdown dates. And now the banks are raising money at 6%. So our interest rates are higher. So you know who's suffering? The consumer.
The average guy, yeah.
The guy borrowed money, that money, he borrowed it at 2% from 1.99%. It's a record low fixed rate for 3 years. All of a sudden, he's gone from fixed 1.99%. Now he's paying 7%. Our consumers are paying for this. The banks are making the same amount of profit as they've always made. They're just charging the borrower more.
Yep.
And the way forward was, well, our central bank said, well, inflation's really high. It's really bad. We don't like high inflation. So, and you consumers, you caused it. You caused high inflation. So we're going to put interest rates up.
Yep.
And the bank said, we're not responsible. The Reserve Bank, central banks put the interest rate. We just put the interest rate up as they go along. And now the consumer's bearing the risk of this. You know, it's really interesting. I remember Milton Friedman. Not many people, you would remember him, but not many people remember him. I remember watching him in the 90s, and it's up on YouTube these days, Friedman. And he says, consumers never create inflation. Governments do.
Correct. They print money.
They print money. And they make it available for the liquidity.
For the rich. System.
Yeah. And the only people who make money out of that is the rich people at the end of the day. And
then you get in trouble, they bail out the rich.
Yeah.
And the Aussie bloke gets penalized.
Well, the rich people buy and bail themselves out by influencing the government to do the bailout. So that is a premise of your book, though.
Yes.
I think what you're sort of saying is, be like the rich guys.
Yeah. Think like my rich dad, not my poor dad.
Yeah, think like the rich guy, the rich dad.
Yeah.
Like learn from the rich dad. And I think what you're sort of saying here, and this is it's quite compelling, but you're saying there's no point fighting against the machine. I mean, you can storm the White House or whatever you want to do, but that's not going to do anything at the end of the day. The system will close you down.
Yeah.
just like it might close Donald Trump down or make it really difficult for him. I mean, God bless the guy. Like, he's so tough. I mean, I wouldn't be able to handle that. I would have gone, I'm out. I would have hung my gloves up.
Yeah.
But you can fight against the machine if you want to, and you can argue against it, and you can put up posts on Instagram and talk about the conspiracy and, you know. But at the end of the day, forget about it. Just think like the other mob. Join them. Be quite thoughtful.
Educate yourself. Right.
And probably, would you say, act upon it as well?
Yes.
Where do people get the courage to, once they educate themselves, to actually go out and do the things that you're talking about?
Well, it's easier to do something for other people. Like, create the cash flow board game.
Yep.
Learn it, play it 10 times, and then teach other people. Give and you shall receive. When you do it for other people, stuff comes in. But if you're just taking for yourself, who cares, you know? You're greedy. And that's a big, big difference there. Aussie's the lucky country. Don't fuck it up. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Just,
well, that's what Trump said to me.
Yeah, don't fuck it up.
Yeah. I thought he's been a bit extreme in 2016, but it's actually come to be true now. And then if you think about, you know, COVID, you know, Fauci, the whole COVID thing. In Australia, I don't know if we were, our Australian legislators and government were covertly involved in what was going on. Just, I think we probably followed what was going on in the United States. I
mean, it's big pharmaceutical companies.
They influenced the program.
Of course. It's bankers, pharmaceutical, you know, those guys.
Are you guys having an inquiry in America, as we are here in Australia, about the vaccines, like the effects of the vaccines?
Yeah.
You are getting, and because some of the findings are here.
It's terrible. Like,
horrendous.
Yeah.
But it's not getting any airtime. I don't understand it. There's no airtime. No one's talking about it. I mean, we might see it on Sky News on Rupert Murdoch's channel here, but we don't see it anywhere else.
No.
Why do you think that is?
Well, pharma. Big business. I remember I had to travel, I had to get a vaccine. I refused to. So I just found a doctor. I paid him $500. He put the vaccine in his thing and said, thank you, bye.
And you got the certificate.
Got the certificate. I'm not that stupid, you know what I mean? I'll cheat, but I don't. It's my body they're putting stuff into. Just the schools put ideas in your head. One more thing is, when we talk about the repo market, it's very simple. It's like the pawn shop for banks.
Yeah, that's exactly
right. Very, very, very simple.
Yeah, yeah.
So when that went down, COVID appeared, I went, oh my God, is that an accident? Or is it intentional? And I don't know. I don't have an answer to that. But there's too many coincidences. And so that's why I wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad in 97. The cash flow board game came up in 96. And if we don't educate ourselves, then shame on us. But schools will not do it because schools are complicit with the banks.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think so?
They're Marxist. I mean, you know.
That's where they start from.
I read the Communist Manifesto in 65. I went to military school. I went, oh my God. You know, they made two predictions. 1930, they were going to take over the school system, which they did. And then they would take our elections. They did.
And that would be Trump's position today. Yeah. Your last election that he lost.
And I respect the freedom of choice. You can be a Marxist, you can be a capitalist. But without financial education, as you know in the banking industry, if you don't have any financial education, you can't be a capitalist.
And you can't make a proper decision either.
Correct.
Because you don't know what
Correct.
Suits you. Because, I mean, the Marxist position is very romantic.
Oh, yes.
It's
abolition of private property, labor unions, taxation.
Fairness, you know.
Fairness, you know, equality.
Progressive tax system, you know, we'll tax the rich to look after the poor. It's like Robin Hood. It's sort of like a romantic thing. It's a theme. But the reality is we're not all equal and we don't all earn the same amount of money. None of us are prepared to work as hard as the next person or even as hard as the person.
Everybody's got to be equal.
Yeah, but nobody is equal.
And what's even worse in America, I don't know how it is here, they're encouraging boys to become girls. I'm going, what's wrong with you guys?
Yeah, but we're getting the same issue here.
Yeah.
And girls to become boys.
Yeah.
And it's sort of okay if that's how they're born or whatever, but like it's not, no one needs to encourage it.
Yeah.
no one needs to say bring it on.
Yeah.
Because young kids are not in a position to make decisions, I don't feel.
When I was a kid, right, sex education was Playboy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Today, they got hardcore porn on their iPhone, you know. They more about sex than you and I ever will.
Yeah, totally. And they know how to find it quicker than I will or you will. And it's funny, like for when I was a kid, there was a magazine in Australia called Ribald. And it was a paper magazine. It wasn't glossy like Playboy. And there was a news agent, I won't name the area, but where I went to school out in the western suburbs of Sydney, which is sort of a little bit rough out there. And there was one guy in our school who used to go and steal this Ribald every week. And then we'd all be waiting for him to, in the library.
That was sex education, right?
Yeah, that was sex education. It would get passed around the library. So we had these library sort of stalls, everyone, and he'd be sitting there waiting, when's he finished with it? When's he going to send it over to me? And so Ribald was like the thing. And that you're right, that's where we got a sex education. You wouldn't get it from mum and dad. There was none of these iPads and there was nothing electronic. And it was, he grew up a certain way and that was it. Now, I know there's going to be exceptions to this. Don't get me wrong. There will be exceptions. To this, there's some kids who are born a certain way, and that's okay. They make the choice. But I want people, I agree, I would like to make sure that education institutions are making the decisions for these kids.
Yeah.
It's the kids making the decisions for themselves.
Correct.
At a time when they're equipped to make the decision.
Right.
And it's the parents' duty.
Correct.
It's not the school's duty.
Correct. Amen. Amen, brother.
It's for the mom and dad in relation to their kids.
They can influence a child.
Yeah. And kids, and hopefully, parents have a better, good enough relationship with the kid that the kid can talk to the parents, the parent can talk to the kid in a, you know, nice neutral way. But for me, I got grandkids, and for my grandkids, the thought of the fact that my grandkids might go to school and someone might influence any one of my grandsons to choose a different sex for themselves really pisses me off.
Yeah.
Like it gets the very, maybe I'm too old, I don't know, but it just pisses me off. I mean, I don't like it. I don't like it at all. And I guess this happened to me, but sometimes I feel helpless about this stuff because they're there every day, all day with them. And my only way to influence this is to somehow combat that. And I don't know how the hell you combat that other than send them to a different school where I know the ethics of the school is different to the ethics of the school they might be at now.
Yeah,
and I'm lucky. I've only got one of my grandkids at school at the moment. The others are too little, but it's all of a sudden in Australia, at least in New South Wales, private Catholic schools have popped up everywhere and have huge demand. They're not expensive schools, but huge demand for kids to be enrolled, even if they're not Catholic. They could be Muslim, Jewish, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because parents are seeing this as a better way
Correct.
To keep them from being influenced from the government-style schools.
Correct.
And that's a bother to me. We live in this system. I mean, is this something going on in America?
The school system is enemy now.
Yeah.
I hate to say that, but I'm going, that was my poor dad. They're good people.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But they got too far the other side.
Yeah, you're right. They are they're genuine. They're genuine about what they believe in.
Right.
But the system is institutionalizing the kids that go into it, and that's the part I don't like. And we sort of don't have a choice. If you're a kid whose parents got no money, you can't afford to send your kid to a private school.
Correct.
You're going to put him into the system.
Correct.
Or her into the
Correct.
System.
You've got
and,
it.
And then your sort of your kid will turn out as a product of the system.
Correct.
And that's sort of unfair for the kid.
But that's why in 1996 I created the board game so parents could teach their kids at home.
So the cash flow board game is for kids as well?
There's kids and adults.
Yeah. And is it
all it teaches is a financial statement, income expense, asset liability statement of cash flow. That's your report card when you grow up. That's your grade point average.
It's funny, you know, when I went into business with Kerry Packer, and it's sort of he's quite a well-known Australian guy many, many years ago when I had the Wizard business. Kerry used to say, I want you to bring in the financial accounts of the business. We're 50-50 in this business. He said, bring the accounts every month and I want to go through them. So the first time I went there and we had, you know, accounts, EBITDA and all that. He said, son,
yeah,
I'm not interested in all that shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He said, I want you to tell me, don't even show it to me. I want you to tell me how much money came in this month.
Yeah.
How much money went out. How much we got in the bank.
Yeah.
do we owe money to anyone? And are we, and is anyone owed money to us?
Yeah.
Like, and how long have they owed us the money?
Right.
So like a debtor's ledger, aged 60, 90, 30, 60, 90. Creditor's ledger, who do we owe money to? Because he didn't want me to like dud him. And then how much money came in and out? He said pretty simple.
Yeah.
I don't care about all that stuff.
Yeah.
Don't give me all that fancy crap.
Yeah.
EBITDAs and multiples and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Just tell me if dough came in the joint.
Yeah.
And that was a big lesson for me. And I actually, so I went off many years later and I wrote a little playbook for how you run your financial, the financials in your business, the month, your monthly management meeting. Money in, money out, what's owed, what we owe. End of story. Oh, by the way, just check the bank rec to make sure the amount of money in the bank is what we should have. In other words, no one's nicking it. No one's stealing money from us. Pretty simple stuff, isn't it?
Yep.
And the cash flow game, the cash flow board game is teaching kids really simple stuff.
Yeah.
Because credit cards and—
As my rich dad taught me, he says, your banker never asks you for your report card.
Yeah.
Your bank wants to see your financials. The other thing about financial literacy is, do you speak the language of money? So when I hear guys throwing on EBITDA and this, 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 I go, no, it's just how much money is coming in, how much money is going out. What's an asset? Assets put money in your pocket. Liabilities take money from your pocket. If you change your vocabulary, you change your life. That's how powerful words are. But they don't teach you the language of money. So that's why I created the cash flow board game, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, assets, liabilities, taxes. They don't teach you taxes at school. And Trump and I don't pay taxes legally. The same as this country. If you know what you're doing, you don't have to pay taxes. See, the more debt I use, debt became money in 71 when Nixon took the dollar off the gold standard. The more debt I use, the more tax breaks I get.
Yeah.
Why? Because if you and I don't borrow money, as you know, the economy crashes. So we have to have people borrowing money for the economy to keep growing. So that's why they keep raising interest rates. People can't borrow money. Meanwhile, your population's increasing. People can't afford to live here now. I mean, it's making the news in America.
Really?
How expensive Aussie real estate is.
Wow, that's a bother. So we're a small population, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
Like house prices have absolutely skyrocketed in Australia. If you're trying to rent a property in Australia, like you're in the rental game, you can line up for 3 hours and not even get to inspect a place.
Yeah.
And we just got such a massive shortage of real estate. And, you know, I think to myself, it's funny. I thought to myself, isn't it interesting? Governments aren't dumb. They allow hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people to come into the country to fill a so-called shortage of skilled labor. But at the same time, they don't create more real estate for them to live in. Why is that the case? I mean, why would they do that? Why wouldn't they have said, well, where's everybody going to live? It's a pretty obvious question. Like, where are these millions of people who are coming in over the next couple of years, where are they going to live? To build a house in Australia, to build houses in Australia, takes ages.
Yeah.
You have to get approvals and you've got to build it. And the builder's got to get finance. There's just a process here in Australia. It's very difficult.
And I understand because I own rental property here. I used to. Bondi Junction and Rush Cutters Bay and all that.
Good territory.
I don't know. I buy them, you know, and somebody manages them. I wish I'd never sold them. It's a mistake.
Because we have such a shortage.
Yeah, and it's great property.
That's crazy that it's being talked about in the US.
Yeah.
Like you mean in the
it makes the news.
It makes the news.
Yeah.
Well, that's a real worry for us.
Yeah.
And is there any solution that you've seen anywhere around the world that can solve these shortages apart from just building stuff?
Well, I think it's up to every individual to take control of their own finances, their own financial statement, and don't expect the government to take care of you.
Yeah.
And I think that's very liberal, which is kind. But, you know, I was taught you teach a man a fish, you feed him for life. Give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. And socialism wants to give people fish and makes the problem bigger and worse.
Instead of teaching them how to fish.
Yep.
That's really interesting.
So that's what the cash flow board game was all that. How do you manage a financial statement? Your financial statement is your report card when you leave school.
So basically, I think the lesson I'm getting out of this whole discussion with the legend Robert Kiyosaki is this. if you're a parent or a grandparent, in my case, get this cash flow board game.
Teach
and start getting it into their heads early.
Yeah.
It might be competing with other sort of indoctrinations.
Correct.
But it doesn't matter. At least they're in a position down the track to make a call on what suits them best.
Yeah. I always remember what Maria Montessori said. You know, Montessori school is a great system.
We got a few of them, Andy.
Yeah. What the hand does, the mind remembers. So you can't learn to play golf reading a book, do you know?
Yeah.
So the more you play the game, you play the game 10 times and you teach 10 people, your brain will change.
That's very interesting because I'm like that when I come down to, when it comes to memory, unless I write things down.
Can't remember.
I don't remember anything. Yeah. I have to write stuff down. And by the way, these things don't work in that environment because you read them, you've got nowhere to write anything. I mean, unless you've got a piece of paper on the side and writing notes.
Right. What the hand does, mind remembers.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like my father used to always say, kids don't do what they're told, they do what they see.
Yeah.
You know, watch your dad.
Right.
What's dad doing? Nobody's telling you to do. What's he actually doing physically? What's dad up to? And I think that's always been a very powerful thing to me. And some of the greatest lessons I got out of life in relation to what my father and my mother did for me is what I saw them do. And it took me 30, 40 years to work that out. But it's what I saw them do. It's not what I heard them tell me to do. In fact, they didn't tell me much to do. And people often say to me, who taught you? I just watched my parents work hard, you know, invest well.
Pay taxes.
Yeah, I don't like that part, but yeah, pay taxes. Work hard, invest well. My parents were big into investment and entrepreneurialism and take risks.
They're your teachers.
Take good risks.
Yeah.
Know what your risk is, understand the marketplace, but take risks.
Yeah.
Well, Robert Kiyosaki, I actually really do hope that you do come back to Australia.
Well, thank you.
And I hope that we can share a coffee or something like that or a conversation another time down the track.
Sounds
thanks fun. Very much for your forthrightness.
Well, thank you.
And thanks for doing these sorts of things like Rich Dad, Poor Dad and giving a gift to us in Australia about a way to think.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Think like a rich person, like a capitalist.
Yeah. Give yourself a half a chance.
Correct. And teach your kids.
Yeah, and by the way, pay it forward to your kids.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. Australia can change the world because there's only a few people here. It's a rich country. It's a lucky country. But unfortunately, our academic system is Marxist. A lot of your leaders are Marxist, as you know.
Currently.
It's a very trying time throughout the world economy. China's in trouble. Germany's in trouble. America's in trouble.
And we're not in trouble at this stage, but if we're not careful, we could be.
Yeah.
And look after your own backyard.
Correct.
Look after your own corners.
And this is your greatest asset or liability right here.
Totally.
Take care of this one.
The way you think. Yeah. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.